Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert. Psalm 68 verse 1 from the New King James Bible says this: Let God arise, let his enemies be scattered, let those who hate him flee before him. I'm with David Pelegi from Christ Church in Jerusalem, and we're talking about a narrow bridge, Jewish life in Poland then and now, study tour. Tell us a bit about what you're going to be doing.
Well, for many years, Paul, we've been taking Christians, mostly Christians, to Poland or to other parts of Central and Eastern Europe, simply because many people have had a fascination and an interest with the Jewish people, especially as their story unfolds in the Bible. And then folks kind of want to know, well, what happens after the biblical period? And as a way of answering that need or addressing that need for us to know something more about the Jewish people and their experiences, we've been bringing people to Poland for many years. So you might say it's part two of the story: God's dealings with his people, Jewish-Christian relations, the political history of that part of Europe, how Jews influenced Poland and European, you might say, civilization, but at the same time how Eastern Europe and Poland in particular influenced and shaped the Jewish people and Jewish experience. So all those things and more are the issues that we examine while touring through Poland.
What will people see and what will people learn on the tour?
Well, as I said, there is the whole issue of Jewish-Christian relations, especially in that part of Europe, which are kind of complicated and nuanced and not always so simple to characterize. And then we have an emphasis on, you might say, Jewish life and how Jews prospered and survived spiritually, economically, culturally during this time. We talk about the Hasidic revival, Jewish messianism, and more. And of course, there's a lot of emphasis given to the Holocaust and what happens, how it happens. And we have a special emphasis on those folks who, despite, you might say, all the odds or despite all the dangers, actually risked their lives for Jewish people. Why did they do so? How did they do it? And at the same time, why did so many people just kind of stand by and do nothing? And we want to make this not only a story about the past, but to bring these things into the present. And we hope that the tour will not only challenge us to be firm in our stand against anti-Semitism, but also to, you might say, to check us in a way so that we're not bystanders or we're apathetic while other genocides are taking place around the world.
What places in the country do you visit, and do you also go to the concentration camps?
Well, we start in Warsaw, and we go through what is now eastern Poland, visiting cities like Bialystok and Lublin and Zamość and, of course, Krakow. And we are going to places that actually many tourists and even many Polish people never visit. As for the concentration camps, we don't go to any concentration camps, but we go to at least three death factories. This is Treblinka, Sobibor, and Belzec. And we also go to the concentration camp and death camp or death factory known as Auschwitz-Birkenau. I think many people, when they think of the Holocaust, they characterize Jews being brought to camps where they stay for quite some time and then they're eventually killed. But in most cases, vast majority of cases, Jews were killed at death factories almost immediately upon arrival, or they were taken into the forests close to the places where they lived, and they were shot and buried in pits. So it's a very brutal and even shocking picture, but it's a story that really needs to be told. And we need to understand the chronology of this and actually how it came about. It's, you know, Paul, one thing, people think of the Holocaust, they conjure up these black and white images of maybe folks and, you know, starving people in pinstripe uniforms, numbers on their arms, or they think of trains, or and it becomes all sort of a mess inside their heads. And we can't draw any lessons or any conclusions from this unless we understand its basic structure. How did it happen? When did it happen? And most difficult question to answer, why did it happen? The how and the when and the where is somewhat easy. The why is a little harder.
Yeah, you'll be looking at Germany's final solution. How did everyday Germans get sucked into this? And did Christians actually get sucked into this as well?
Oh, well, that's also another something else that we emphasize. We take a very popular book known as Ordinary Men. The author of that book is Christopher Browning. And he follows the steps of a group of policemen, reserve policemen from the city of Hamburg in Germany. These were men in their late 30s and 40s. They were not really suitable for frontline combat. They were family men. Some of them may have been Christians. The vast majority of these 500 men were not affiliated with the Nazi Party. Yet, these so-called ordinary men are sent to Poland, and they are given the task of rounding up Jews in central and southern Poland, either executing them or putting them on trains and sending them to places like Treblinka and Belzec. So Browning asks the question, how did these so-called ordinary men, who are not Nazis, you know, what led them to do these despicable things? What led them to have so much blood on their hands? And ultimately, they were responsible for the deaths of 80,000 people.
Wow.
So how and why did this happen? How did they get sucked into this? What were the social pressures, the cultural pressures, you know, the personal pressures that made people do these things? So I think that's those lessons, by the way, are important for us today, especially as Christians. Not that many of us will find ourselves in a similar situation as those policemen were, but we will, or we do, find ourselves subject to all kinds of cultural pressures or group pressures. And we need to remember the scripture from Exodus that says, do not follow a multitude to do evil. And we need to know how the multitude works, what pressures will eventually come to bear on us, and how we can resist those pressures to remain faithful witnesses of the Lord. So maybe another way of putting your question, there were so many Christians who, in all of this, for one reason or another, they were bystanders. I don't think we can characterize the Holocaust as a Christian genocide, you might say, motivated by Christianity. The Nazi ideology was extremely anti-Christian, anti-God, at least the God of the Bible, and those who carried out or planned this policy were not churchgoers. But there were many believers or many Christians, and for one reason or another, maybe because of fear, or because of confusion, not knowing what to do or what to say, simply did nothing. And I suppose that's one of the big tragedies and one of the things that all of us should learn. Don't be a bystander, yes, especially when mass murder or genocide is occurring anywhere in the world, right? And so we can ask many people ask me the question, why didn't people do things? And so we can answer that question and suggest, why didn't we do much or do anything when it came to Darfur? Or why are we doing little or nothing when it comes to the way the Chinese are treating their Muslim minority, yes, in northwest China, right? That's a genocide. And yet we find ourselves either too busy or too apathetic, or the suffering is too far away to somehow move us or motivate us, you know, into doing anything. And of course, it can be even a little sadder than all that, because folks can say, well, after all, they're Muslims, and, you know, I don't really like the Muslim religion or the Islamic religion, or, you know, the Muslims may be a threat in some way, so I don't really see any need, or I don't have any desire, you might say, to get involved in helping people. And of course, that's what many people said about the Jews. Mm. Well, after all, it's only the Jews, and maybe they deserve it, and I'm not sticking, you know, my neck out, you know, for them. And of course, there is a latent, not more than a latent, there was an anti-Semitic undertone in many corners of Europe at that time as well. So these are all things that we want to expose. It's not only a tour about death and dying, but there is a lot of life and a lot of good news in all of this, and those are things that we also stress as well.
Now, Poland had the largest Jewish community in the world. Was it the Second World War and the Holocaust that just totally destroyed that?
Yes. At least 90%, if not more, of the Jewish population of Poland was murdered. Maybe 10% survived. And they survived mostly because those Jews were deported by the Soviet Union to other parts of the Soviet Union when the Soviets occupied half of Poland in 1939. So, ironically, it was the fact that many Jews were sent to the Gulag, or they were sent, deported to places like Kazakhstan, that enabled them to survive.
Now, there was anti-Semitism before the war actually happened. Mm-hmm. So are you wanting people on the tour to understand anti-Semitism better, because that was the route that actually got people to murder Jews?
Yes, that's a complicated question. There was the background or the context of all of this is certainly anti-Semitism. And I don't want to minimize that, or I don't want to downplay that. But anti-Semitism isn't necessarily in and of itself murderous. Anti-Semitism isn't as vicious, you might say, as it was in the 1930s and 1940s. Anti-Semitism mixed with something else, which made it, I think, even more dangerous and even more potent. It mixed with a very distinct, even apocalyptic, political and social and cultural ideology known as Nazism. And that's what I think we really have to watch out for. And so today there is a lot of anti-Semitism. And when it marries itself to a philosophy that says the Jews are in a one-world conspiracy, and that the elites of this world, or the deep state of this world, or the George Soros types are somehow bringing or undermining our civilization or undermining our society, what we need to do is to somehow have a reformation or to have a renewal, but we have to get rid of Jews and Jewish influence. It's those kinds of ideas that can become, you know, very frightening and even very, very dangerous. And we have to be, I think, very, very careful about anti-Semitism that mixes with the New Age, mixes with a political philosophy, mixes with a politician who says, you know, I can solve all of your problems, you know, just by snapping my fingers, right? There's an instant solution. And, of course, the Jews are at the root of this problem, or could be the Muslims are at the root of this problem, or the conservatives or the evangelicals are at the root of this problem. And as soon as I can take care of them or remove them or dehumanize them, then all our problems as a society, you know, will be solved. Yeah, there are no instant quick fixes to the mess that we're in. Surely we need a revival, and people do need to turn to the Lord and become disciples. But, you know, those offering, you know, solutions outside of that, I would be very, very suspicious of those kind of ideologies or those kinds of political or religious leaders.
It sounds like it's going to be a very challenging tour.
It is. Many people come back and their lives are changed, and their perspective and the way of understanding the world is radically changed as well. I don't want to leave, again, I don't want to leave your listeners with the idea that folks come back and, you know, fall into some kind of state of depression because of the, you might say, the wickedness or the sinfulness of the human race. We do discuss a number of Christian leaders who responded courageously in Poland during the Nazi period, during the communist period as well. We examine their examples and examine some of their, you might say, their theology or the way they understood the scriptures. And that's there's a lot of reason, you might say, a good reason for hope in all of that. So it's biblical, we hope. There is a lot of Bible teaching along the way. We talk about Jewish life, Jewish culture, the way Jews implemented the scriptures or tried to live out the message of the Torah, what we might learn from that, what things we, as a Christian community, with all due respect to the Jewish people, things we may want to avoid, things that, of course, Jews did well, things that maybe Gentile culture did not do so well. So we try to be merciful and broad and hopefully not too simplistic or black and white, because the situation in Poland 4,000 years up until the war certainly defies, you might say, simplistic characterization. But yet, at the same time, I'll never say it's so complicated or it was such a mess that there's nothing we really can't learn from this. This, at least, I reject radically.
We've just had Holocaust Remembrance Day here in Israel. Do you think the world has really learned anything about Holocaust and anti-Semitism?
No, I don't think the world's learned. Well, I can't say that. I think there has been some lessons that have been learned. I think in many places in Europe and in the West, I think we are much more sensitive to anti-Semitism. At the same time, you know, we have replaced anti-Semitism with a, you might say, an unfair criticism of Israel. So, for example, in the Middle Ages, when something went wrong in your village, you know, when the well water somehow turned bad, well, it had to be the Jews. Or, you know, where there was a disease, must have been caused by the Jews. Or there was a fire, well, certainly the Jews have to be responsible. So the Jews become the demons, and they're responsible for every problem in the world. And so today, it's not very acceptable to say such things, but very often, it's the state of Israel that is demonized and becomes responsible, you know, for virtually every problem in the world. And so before we go any further, I'd like to say that we need to say that it is not anti-Semitic to criticize the state of Israel and to criticize their policies. Many policies of the state of Israel need to be critiqued and should not be perhaps condoned or easily swept under the rug by Christians, especially those Christians who may understand God's purposes, future purposes for the Jewish people. But at the same time, if you look at the press, if you look at universities or the UN, you know, virtually all the attention or a huge proportion of attention, yes, is given to Israel, its faults and its sins, where China, for example, and up until recently, Russia or Saudi Arabia or places that had much worse human rights records, you know, somehow get a pass, right? That's a sort of, that's a modern, you might say, form of anti-Semitism, to only criticize Israel for the Palestinian problem and not to be critical of Lebanon or the Arab states or perhaps other countries which have also suppressed and even oppressed Palestinians or denied them their rights, again, is somewhat hypocritical. Today, many people say, I'm pro-Palestinian. I think that's really wonderful. But then when you ask them, well, tell me something. Do you know Arabic? Well, many people will say no. Do you know what Palestine, you know who the favorite Palestinian singer might be? What can you tell me about their culture? What can you tell me about their food? All they can tell you is they're somehow against Israel. And I think it's wonderful if people want to be quote unquote pro-Palestinian. But they need to do so in a way that is honest, and that they frame that love and support in a way that's not simply, oh, I'm against Israel, or I'm against the settlements, you know, I'm against this thing or that thing. I don't think that's actually real love, showing real love or interest in the Palestinian people. It's just showing an anti-Israel bias. That's my opinion in all of this. Secondly, for what it's worth, genocide still happens around the world. Nobody wants to say anything or say much about China. Russia, its brutal campaign in Chechnya, the situation perhaps in Ethiopia. I'm not sure if that's genocide or not, but still you have mass murder going on in many places at different times. And often, very often, we're just very apathetic towards such a thing. Now, finally, Paul, at least on this point, surely people can't get involved, you know, in every cause, every good cause in the world. Otherwise, we would be exhausted. we would even probably collapse, you know, from some kind of depression, because, you know, there's so many good things, or so many good works, so many good causes that all of us could be involved in 24/7. But I would think that the prevention of genocide should be number one on everybody's list, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian. You know, the mass murder, wherever that takes place for political reasons or religious reasons, ethnic reasons, you know, I would think should be number one on everyone's list. And whether we're Christians or not Christians, this is the kind of thing that we should be praying about, taking practical action to do what we can to stop murder, from mass murder from happening, and to prevent it from ever getting started.
What's your prayer for the tour?
Oh, my prayer for the tour is that the eyes of our hearts will be opened, that we'll be challenged to the spiritual realities in which we find ourselves, especially as Jews and Christians, because, you know, ultimately, you know, all of these things, if we want to talk about the politics and the culture and military history and Joseph Stalin and the Ukrainians and the Poles and, you know, all of this is, I think, needs to be seen in that light, but also needs to be seen spiritually. And it's our prayer that we can combine both to the point, as I just mentioned, that the eyes of our heart will be open. And ultimately, we'll know that we fight not against flesh and blood, but that there's a greater spiritual battle going on here.
When is the tour, and how can people get involved? Do you have a website for people who'd like to know more?
The tour starts on August the 6th, goes to the 17th of August, begins in Warsaw, ends in Warsaw, and they can get involved by being in contact with Christ Church Jerusalem. And we're on the internet, and our email can be found there, and if they have a query, they can write us. Also, the tour is being promoted on our Facebook page as well, Christ Church Jerusalem.
Okay, David, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.